Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things that aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
So welcome to Dr. Kelly Mahler. Dr. Kelly, please share your wisdom with us, and Shanti, we will check on this later.
Okay, thank you so much, Anna, for the introduction. I am so excited to have this opportunity to be speaking at the Embodiment Conference. I feel like I'm with my people here because I have dedicated so much of my career in educating people about this sense called interoception, and it is so linked to embodiment, and it's all about developing this inner awareness and the importance of our body. And so I'm so excited to bring this information, whether it's new or just a review, to all of you during this conference. So I'm just going to dive right in because I know that we have a short window, and I definitely want to leave time for questions at the end. So first of all, like, what is this interoception word mean? What we know from research and science is that the human body has 8 different senses, and we have the senses on the left side of the screen. These are your outside senses. These are the senses that many of us are very familiar with. These sensors are in charge of pulling in sensory information from the world outside of our bodies. So for example, we have our sense of sight. You have receptors, which are your eyeballs, pulling in sensory information about all that you see outside of your body, all that you see in the external world. And that information is pulled in through your eyeballs, through the receptors, and that information is sent to your brain, and your brain does a lot of really cool work with that information. Same thing for your sense of sound. You have your receptors or your ears pulling in information about all that you hear outside of your body, and that information is pulled in through your ears, sent to the brain. And then we have these senses on the right, and these are your inside senses, and they work just the same as your outside senses. So they each have a set of receptors located within your body in charge of pulling in information. Only this time, the difference is that these senses are pulling in information from the inside of your body. And so we have our sense of proprioception, and proprioception is pretty much your sense of where your body is positioned. So I can put my arm out to the side, bent in approximately a 90 degree angle, and I have little receptors in all of my joints and muscles telling me where my body is located. So the receptors in my wrists, my elbow, my shoulder, and all the receptors in my muscles sending information to my brain that my arm is out to the side, bent in a 90 degree angle. I don't need to look at my arm to know where it is positioned. My sense of proprioception lets me know where my body is. And then we have your sense of vestibular, and that's your sense of movement and balance. And you have receptors for this sense in your inner ear. And every time you move, those receptors are activated and send information to your brain about how you're moving, what direction are you moving in, how fast you're moving. And then finally, to round out these inside senses, we have the reason that we're here today, and that is interoception. And interoception works just like all of the other senses. It has a set of receptors located in your body in charge of pulling in sensory information. And so the receptors for this sense are located very extensively throughout the inside of your body. So you have receptors for interoception located in all of your major organs. So in your lungs, in your heart, in your stomach, in your bladder, in your colon, you have receptors for this for interoception in your skin, your muscles. You even have receptors for interoception in the whites of your eyeballs. And so these receptors are continually pulling in information about how your body is feeling, how all of these different body parts are feeling, what is the condition of these body parts. So for example, the receptors in the lining of your stomach, pulling in information about how your stomach is feeling. So is it gassy? Is it full? Is it empty? Is it nauseous? Do you have that little butterfly feeling in your stomach? And so those receptors are pulling in that information and sending that information to the brain. And the area of the brain where this information is landing is predominantly landing in your insula. And we all have two insula. You have a right insula and a left insula located deep within your side parts of your brain or your temporal lobe. And so all of these incoming interception signals are landing in your insula, and your insula uses these incoming signals as clues to your emotions. So if we go back to the receptors in the lining of your stomach, if those receptors are pulling in information that your stomach feels empty or it's growling, your insula uses those as clues that you're hungry. Or maybe your receptors in your stomach pulling in information that you have that little fluttery feeling in your stomach, and your insula can use that as a clue that maybe you're feeling anxious or nervous. So interoception provides us with this very tight body emotion connection. And interoception is what underlies our emotional experience. So emotions are not what we once thought, like these cognitive processes that are occurring. They are occurring because of our body, because we have a body, and because of this sense called interoception. And scientists talk about how interoception helps us to feel two different categories of emotions. So interoception helps us to feel traditional emotions. They call them affective emotions. So interoception helps us to feel joy and excitement and anxiety and frustration and boredom. But then interoception also helps us to feel something called homeostatic emotions. And these are emotions like hunger and thirst and pain and illness and body temperature. So interoception is helping us to experience such a wide range of life, both our affective emotions and our homeostatic emotions. And if you're someone that likes a definition, this is just for you, that interoception definition. It's the sensory system that gives you your information regarding your body and emotion connection. And what we know from science is that interoception has two different arms, and we have what scientists call implicit interoception. And this side of the sense is happening beneath your level of consciousness, beneath your level of awareness. We don't even know that it's happening. It's what is tied to, if you're familiar with the word homeostasis, or that the process within our body, where our bodies are constantly striving for a state of regulation and balance. And that this implicit side of interoception is how that is happening. So changes within all of our different body parts are happening. Those receptors that I was talking about are picking up on those changes, and it's really triggering our homeostatic processes and helping our bodies to remain as balanced as possible. And so for example, before you stand up, your blood pressure increases. Like, that is happening below our, mostly, many of us are not aware of that happening, or our liver releases enzymes to help our bodies remain regulated. I mean, most of us are not waking up in the morning and say, golly gee, my liver is releasing a lot of enzymes right now. We don't feel those things happening. We're not aware of those things happening, but they're happening all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's that implicit interoception side that helps our bodies remain regulated. But then we also have this other side of interoception. And this is the side that I think that most of us are pretty interested in all of the embodiment practices. And this is our explicit interoception side. And this is where we have a conscious experience with our body signals, where we're aware of the way that our bodies are feeling and of our emotions. And sometimes researchers call this interoceptive awareness, but this is just the degree in which you might be noticing signals like a racing heart or a growling stomach or tense muscles. And some of us are more aware of those signals and others of us are not as aware of those signals. So I just wanted to talk about this connection. What we know is that interoception has such a vast influence on our lives. It underlies so many different aspects of our life. We have a great free infographic on my website. If you're interested in teaching other people about interoception, you can print this out. And this infographic just talks about, this is a summary of the research and all the different skills that interoception has been found to contribute to. And we're going to talk about some of these that are involved in the embodiment process. Other areas, interoception is tied to our sleep habits, and it's tied to our feeding and eating habits. It's tied to all different aspects of social participation, like being able to understand how someone else is feeling in the moment, being attuned to their feelings, being able to develop healthy attachments. Interoception is at play. Interoception is at play in so many different areas, but because this conference is all about embodiment, this is what I wanted to focus on this evening. And interoception in the research, yes, is found to underlie this concept, like that it helps us to know, like, this is me, this is my body, and this is how I feel, this is how I move, this is how I connect with others, and this is how I exist in the world. And so interoception, my goodness, has such an incredibly important role and job. And if you're someone that likes the research, I got a little bit more technical here, but interoception is tied to things like body ownership. We know that this is my body and I am in control of my body, which ties into body agency, of course, and body image. Those people that have better levels of interoceptive awareness are found to have more positive body image. We know that interoception is tied to our level of emotional awareness and also our ability to regulate our emotions. So those people that have better degrees of interoceptive awareness are more aware of their emotions, as well as are better able to regulate their emotions. Interoception underlies this ability to understand that this is myself and this is another person. And we have this self-other awareness that we are two distinct people, but we are interacting together. And then what I find to be so incredible is that interoception also underlies a lot of social connection, which I did mention a little bit before, but interoception, there's such interesting research showing and connecting how if we are in tune with the way our own body feels, we are better attuned to the way other people feel. So we have to understand how we are feeling in order to be intuitively connected to the way other people are feeling. And there's such interesting interoception research looking at that. And of course, that also then feeds that healthy attachment process from early on in development. So embodiment practices, I see this so often. And myself, I have a very active practice in mindfulness and also in yoga, although my yoga practice has been quite impacted by this pandemic. And I cannot wait to get back to my yoga studio because yoga is not quite the same on Zoom. I don't know if all of y'all are experiencing that. But embodiment practices, a lot of them, the underlying science of what they're developing is this interoceptive awareness. And for some people, they realize that's what they're doing. And for other people, they know that they're making improvements and seeing such great benefits, but they don't understand the science of why that is. And interoception is a main underlying neurological reason why all of these embodiment practices are so incredibly powerful, because they're developing this interoceptive awareness. So I don't know, like, I am a science geek, so maybe I'm alone here in appreciating the science behind all of this, but I like to know why things are things are happening, why things are beneficial. And it's because a lot of it is because this whole interoceptive awareness process is being enhanced, and it's really good for all of us. So I just wanted to talk about we all have unique interoception experiences, and we're going to do a couple interoception activities in a few minutes. And I think that it'll be very clear that we all have different interoception experiences for sure. But what we know from the research is that for some of us, we can experience interoceptive awareness extremes. And so in the literature, people are found, for some people, they're found to have body signals that are too big. And so for these individuals, their body signals can be very strong, overpowering, too many body signals are happening at once. So it's like really an overwhelming inner experience for them. And the functional impact of these body signals that are too big can lead to very frequent somatic complaints, chronic pain disorders, high levels of anxiety. In fact, many people with anxiety are found to have these body signals that are too big. Not in all studies, not all studies agree with this, but for many people with anxiety disorders, they are experiencing a lot going on inside their body. These too big body signals are tied to panic disorders, and also tied to self-injurious behavior. The body signals then also, on the other hand, for some can be too small. And this is like the opposite, where body signals are completely muted, and people are missing body signals. So they might not notice that growling feeling stomach, which urges them to eat, or they might not notice that full feeling and they overeat. Or for some of these people, they might only notice body signals when the body signals are really intense. The clients that I support mostly pediatric clients and some young adults. And for a lot of them, they're very dysregulated and they don't notice they're building anxiety until they are in a full meltdown. So they're not noticing those subtle feelings of building anxiety until the anxiety is really extreme. Or for some of my teenage clients, they call this hangry. They don't notice that they're hungry until they're really, really hangry, where they are so extremely hungry that they're irritable, they're melting down kind of thing. Who here experiences, I see Anna waving, experiencing hangry sometimes. So these body signals that are too small, they also can have a major functional impact. For a lot of these individuals, their emotions seem to go from 0 to 100 in like a split second, because they don't notice those interoceptive signals telling them that, oh, like something's off in my body. And if we have any mental health practitioners out there, these two small body signals are tied to something called alexithymia. That's just a fancy word that means that someone has difficulty identifying and describing their emotions. And that's because their inner experience is not giving them enough clues to have that clear emotional experience. These two small body signals can be tied to disordered eating, whether it's undereating or overeating, and also poor healthcare habits. But a lot of these people, I'm working with a neurologist right now whose grandson broke his femur and walked around on a broken femur for 3 days. Okay, that is a body signal that is too small. So they're not urged to take care of their healthcare needs. And I love this quote by Harari. And he says, if you don't feel at home in your body, you will never feel at home in the world. And so if you're experiencing IA extremes, it really can impact your life in such a profound way. And for a lot of my clients, they don't feel at home in their body and they don't feel at home in the world. And that can lead to a lot of issues, including a very traumatic experience for them. And just to complicate things, I just want you to know like kind of what this looks like in case you're supporting people, whether you are guiding embodiment practices or whatever the role, you have your own practice here. But these IA extremes, they can impact you in such different ways. And for some people, the IA extreme can impact just one emotion. Like they might just not they might have, for example, they might have too small of a body signal for noticing when they're full. And so they chronically overeat. But all of their other emotional experiences is very clear. Then on the other hand, you could have someone where, for example, this a young girl, her body signals for anxiety are too small. So she doesn't notice her building anxiety level until it's too late. But then she has a very typical interoception experience for physical exertion. And she notices when her body has had enough active play and she stops. But then her hunger signals are too small and she's constantly relying on her caregivers to remind her to eat. Then for fullness, she has a very typical experience. She has that kind of off switch feeling in her body, knowing when she's had enough. But then on the other hand, for pain, her body signals are too big. And so she's like that little one that has like the tiniest little injury, like a little tiny cut, or she stubs her toe and she's just limping around on that stubbed toe for a week on end. And it's not her being dramatic. It's an actual sensory experience for her due to interoception. And then on the other hand, you could have someone where their anxiety signals are too big and they constantly are feeling so much anxiety and so many body signals on a daily basis, it's completely dysregulating and distracting. And then on the other hand, their signals for joy are too small. They're a lot of times they're overpowered by the too big anxiety signals. And they might have their fullness body signals are too small and they might eat and eat and eat and eat. The body temperature could be typical and then the illness could be too big. And this person could have a lot of somatic complaints. They're constantly going to medical providers. Some of these people get labeled as attention seeking when indeed it is actually a true sensory experience for them. They are overfeeling all of those illness and discomfort within their bodies and seeking out that medical care. So we know these IA extremes are connected to many different conditions, and you might, if you're here as a provider, you might be supporting some of these individuals, but we know that IA extremes are connected to trauma disorders for sure. There's a lot of emerging literature and research looking at interoception and trauma, but it's connected to all of these other conditions on the screen. I'm not going to read all of them, but it's connected to depression and anxiety and individuals that have ADHD, eating disorders, et cetera, et cetera. So these IA extremes are connected to many, many different conditions. And the importance of interoception and mental health is becoming extremely apparent. And there's a lot of neuroscientists and medical doctors out there working hard to provide more awareness and understanding behind interoception. There was a white paper published 2 years ago saying that interoception, essentially, they summarized all of the literature looking at interoception as a pervasive issue that underlies every single mental health diagnosis there is. So that's a pretty profound statement. Pretty profound. And it just goes to show that we need to be paying attention. And I don't need to be telling, this group this. Like, we're all here because we believe in how important the body is, for sure. And just to talk a little bit more about mental health, there's been a lot of different studies looking at this, but I just find this to be incredibly impactful, this study. But this group of researchers looked at people that are on the suicide continuum and looked at their interoceptive awareness and found that people that are on the suicide continuum in their study were found to have interoceptive awareness differences, and that those interoceptive awareness differences were, they got stronger or they grew. People had even more interoceptive difficulties as they went across the continuum of the suicidal continuum. So people with suicidal thoughts in the study found to have interoceptive awareness differences, but people with a suicidal plan had even greater interoceptive awareness differences. And then people that had a history of a suicide attempt had the greatest difference in interoception. So, I mean, I just find this to be incredibly impactful. And because I work primarily in the pediatric setting, like this to me, like I'm thinking, okay, like what do we need to be doing with little ones proactively to help? Perhaps can interoception work? Can embodiment work? ward off some of this, some of these difficulties, some of these mental health challenges in adulthood? We don't know the answers to that yet. I would venture to guess that we were all here would probably vote that that probably is a pretty good route to go. But we definitely need to be looking at that more carefully, for sure. Thankfully, in my country and the United States, our National Institutes of Health have finally recognized the importance of interoception, and they just declared it as a research domain of importance. And so there, all of our institutes that are underneath National Institute of Health have grants and funding for interoception research. If you're interested in learning more about trauma and interception, I recommend this book. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Bessel van der Kolk's work. He is a legend, and I love his book, The Body Keeps the Score. And he talks a lot about the interoceptive experiences in people that have experienced trauma. And he talks about in his book that almost every brain imaging study that's ever been done on a person that has experienced trauma has found abnormal activation of the insula. And so that's giving that brain-based explanation as to why someone is having that interoception challenge. Because if you remember, the insula is the interoception center of the brain. So something on a neurological level is happening that is impacting their interoceptive system due to the trauma. And I think it's important to point out that this IA extreme is not just exclusive to people that have a diagnosis or a condition. That we live in a disembodied world, right? That's why we're all here. And so for many of us, we don't have the strongest levels of interoceptive awareness. We might be experiencing IA extremes due to a busy lifestyle and not taking enough time to tune into our bodies. The level of screen time that we all spend, I mean, I don't know for you, but for me, if I'm having a day where I am Zooming all day long, my attention is constantly pulled outside of my body, and I'm not taking enough time to tune in and listen to what my body is telling me. So there's definitely a disembodied world that is leading to these IA extremes and challenges. So before I wrap up for questions, I just wanted to talk a little bit about interoception supports and what the literature says about improving interoception. So before tuning in and doing any interoception work, we always follow a recipe. It's not really a recipe, but it's things that we need to think about before having our clients tune in. And first of all, we really work hard on co-regulation and helping a person to feel as regulated as possible in the environment that they're in. That felt safety is so important. A person has to feel safe with us and in the environment in order to be able to tune in to their body. If someone is not regulated, if someone does not feel safe, their attention is continually pulled outward. They are hypervigilant of their external world out of safety, and they want to keep themselves safe. That is, you know, first and foremost. So if someone feels unsafe, if someone is dysregulated, their attention is outside, hypervigilant to the environment out of protection. And so they won't have the attentional resources to be able to focus within. So we really need to think about all of that. And that's why an occupational therapist is such a good person on the team, because we understand the sensory world and we are sensory processing experts, and really helping that person to feel safe and regulated. And then of course, that relationship is key before moving into interoception work. And we are always, always, always trauma informed. So that being said, one of the biggest focuses in interoception research is on body mindfulness. And body mindfulness is pretty much one of the only interventions at this point that has been found to increase interoceptive awareness, which I think I'm probably speaking to a lot of people. They're like, yeah, right on. Like, we knew this, right? But there's body mindfulness and being present in the moment and how and being able to mindfully attend to how our body is feeling. And that is found in as short as 8 weeks in some of the studies to have improved interoceptive awareness, which is pretty exciting. But all that being said, and I think that no one here would ever disagree that mindfulness I think we all agree that mindfulness has a lot of really amazing outcomes and benefits, including improved interoceptive awareness. But what we're finding is that traditional mindfulness, especially for a lot of the clients that I'm supporting, and these are younger learners and young adults, that a lot of traditional body mindfulness is not a match for where they're at currently. So many times traditional mindfulness can be really abstract. So you want me to pay attention to my body, especially the inside of my body, which I cannot see. And many times if you have poor IA, you can't feel. So now you're asking someone to pay attention to something they can't see and they can't feel. Like that becomes really abstract. And also we all know that traditional mindfulness requires a lot of attention, right? And that can be really hard for someone that doesn't have an active mindfulness practice. And it also involves a lot of cognition. You have to be able to follow instructions, and that can be challenging for people that are dysregulated. And the mindfulness I see going on in the schools, I'm so excited about all of this. Like, it is mindfulness for everyone around my area, but people are just kind of blankly using it. And there's no really checks to make sure that people are really understanding exactly what it is we want them to be doing. So if you're saying pay attention to your breath, do we know that that individual is really understanding that we want them to be paying attention to their breath? How do we know that they're doing that? How do we know they're understanding us? We're not checking to make sure in some situations. And also, of course, mindfulness requires a safe relationship with your internal sensations, and that isn't always the case for all people. So we really need to take all of these things into mind. And so what my colleagues and I have done is we know the power of body mindfulness. We know that it is the evidence-based intervention for improving IA, but then we also know, on the other hand, that it's not a match for where a lot of people are currently. We want to get them there eventually, but it's not where they're at currently. So what we've done is we've taken mindfulness and we've adapted it. And we have these strategies called IA builders. And these are carefully designed strategies. They're rooted in mindfulness and they are developed to be more concrete. They're very playful. And so we were trying to make mindfulness accessible for more people. And so we use these IA builders, which are rooted in mindfulness or adapted mindfulness, to build IA. So I would invite everyone now to try two experiments with me. If you wish to not participate, that is okay. Just take this as a little break, a little mind break. But I invite you, if you so choose, to try these two experiments with me. So the first experiment, I just want you to invite you to just take a few seconds to tune into your body and think about, how does your body feel right now in this moment? And if you are so brave, you may share with us in the chat pod if you wish. Okay, just for time's sake, I see Carrie is sharing that she feels relaxed, a bit sore from the morning workout. Brad's saying achy stomach, awareness of certain skin areas. Oh, now everything's going so fast. Feeling grounded, tension in my lower back, dehydrated but not thirsty, peaceful, a little tight on the right side, full from lunch. All right. Thank you guys for sharing. I appreciate it. Tired, a warm glow and pressure in your sinus. Awesome. So you can see that we all have very different interoception experiences right now, and there's no right or wrong answers here. And thank you all for sharing with me how your body is feeling. So just for time's sake, I'm going to move on to experiment number two, excuse me. So on your screen, you will see that there is a menu on the right side, and this menu contains words that can be used to describe the way that your hands feel. So sometimes your hands can feel cold, sometimes they can feel warm, sometimes they can feel tight, sometimes they can feel loose, and so forth. And so experiment number two, if you are joining us, I invite you to please squeeze your hands in a fist for 10 seconds. And squeeze them, squeeze them, squeeze them. And how do your hands feel right now while you're squeezing them? You can use a word from the menu, or you can choose your own word. So how do your hands feel right now? Okay, go ahead and relax. If you want to share with us in the chat pod, that's great. If not, just answer on your own. So I see warm, tight, cold, dry, weak, tight. One feels warm, the other cold. Weak, achy, whoa, everything's going so fast. Loose and cold, hot, tight, stocky, hot, tight, compressed, clean because I just showered, warm, tight. So you can hear there's so many different experiences and interoception experiences that we all had. And there's not a right answer. There's not a wrong answer. We all have different interoception experiences. I see more answers coming in, tight, tight and sweaty. Thank you all so much for sharing with me about how your body is feeling. Just for time's sake, I'm going to close that and go on to the next screen. So I wish we were all together. I would love to talk about this a little bit more, but I wonder, just answer to yourself, like which one of these experiments was easier? And I think at this conference, I might have a very different too. Okay, Anna's saying, honesting too. I think that I wonder, because so many of us probably have an active practice, that some of us might say that it's experiment number one, but when we're doing this, this in a general interception conference, most people say that experiment number two was easier. And you can kind of see our little informal research here that when we asked adults, the pink line is those people that answered that experiment number two was easier. And then the teal or the turquoise is those individuals that said that experiment number one. So when we asked adults, most people said that experiment number two was easy. And when we asked children, they also said that experiment number two was easier, but we still have a lot of people that said experiment number one was easier. And I think I would love to further that research and ask, like, do you have an active mindfulness practice or a yoga practice or something along those lines? I bet those people that are answering number one, they probably do have more experience with that. But the reason why people say that experiment number two was easy is because some people share that chunking that mindfulness into one body part at a time is very helpful, because it can be overwhelming to pay attention to your entire body at once, especially in the very beginning if you have poor interoceptive awareness. And over time, we slowly build a person to being able to pay attention to their entire body. So we start with chunking it into one body part at a time, and then we have this slow build to the entire body. Also, when you are squeezing your fists, it evoked a stronger sensation. And many people say, from an attentional standpoint, that helps to capture attention. It helps them to know what to tune into, what feeling to tune into, and what to pay attention to. Also, while a lot of people appreciate the way we have adapted this, because it's learning while doing. And many people, although this is so important to learn eventually, but many people do have difficulty being still. And so learning to tune into your body while doing and being playful can be a much safer way to be introduced to some of this work. And that visual support, that menu of words you can use to describe the way your hands were feeling, many people find that to be really helpful, because some people notice a sensation, but they have a hard time finding a word to use to describe that. And then also that process was interactive. You were telling me what you were feeling. So I kind of knew that you were understanding that I was asking you to pay attention to your hands. So there was a check that you were understanding how to mindfully attend to that body part. Now, we put together a framework for all of these IA builders. It's in something called the Interception Curriculum. I wish I had more time to just share tons of IA builders with everyone tonight or today, or whatever time zone it is for you. But if you want to find out more, we have tons of free resources on my website at kelly-mahler.com. And we have this Interception Curriculum, which actually put together a whole bunch of different IA builders into a systematic framework that we're using to improve interception in children and in adults. And we're having really exciting outcomes. And I'll just quickly I just want to end really quick with just telling you about some of the research that we're doing. We really want to make sure this work we're doing is evidence-based. I am in a profession where evidence is everything for occupational therapy. And we started our very rough pilot study with 8 autistic children in a classroom. And we did the interoception curriculum with them for 8 weeks, and they had statistically significant gains in interoceptive awareness after only 8 weeks of work. And so then in year 2, we went into a learning support classroom in a middle school, and we had mixed diagnoses there. Some of the students had a history of trauma, some had learning disabilities, some had autism. And again, we had statistically significant gains in interoceptive awareness. And this time we also measured emotional regulation, and we had statistically significant gains in IA and emotional regulation after only 7 weeks of the curriculum because we had a snow day. And so these were very small sample sizes, of course. So we went big the next year and we enrolled 166 children with mixed diagnoses from 17 different sites in 4 different countries. And we taught all of these different therapists and educators and caregivers how to use the interoception curriculum, and they used it in 8 weeks. Out of that study, we had 99 children that we had full pretests and full post-tests for. And out of 99 participants, we had statistically significant gains in interoceptive awareness and emotional regulation after 8 weeks of the curriculum. So it's really, really exciting work. We're doing tons of other studies. We did them all in children because that is my passion, but also because there's a lot of interception intervention studies in adults, but there was none in children. So we wanted to fill that gap. But we are doing some interception studies right now in the adult populations and in very different populations. So before I turn it over for questions and answers, I just wanted to tell you how to find me. I have a website, kelly-muller.com, and we also have a very active Facebook group. It's called Interoception, the 8th Sensory System. We have over 14,000 people from all over the world, and we'd love for you to join us there. So Anna, should I just turn it over to questions and read some of them? Is that how you want me to do it?
Yes, please. So we have the first questions, people voted on them. So you can pick whichever is more interesting for you, but I find the first ones were voted the most.
Okay. Oh, so you just want me to go from the top down? Is that what?
I can read them for you. It says, Carrie says, I imagine that a person's interoceptive awareness can be trained and grow. I imagine that meditation can help expand this sensibility. And I wonder if there are training methods for expanding interoception awareness.
Yeah. So Carrie, I hope I answered that question. You're right on the mark there that for sure, mindfulness meditation is what is being shown to enhance interoceptive awareness. I do think that probably there are other obviously avenues for exploring and improving IA, but that's just where the research is right now.
She also says, what are the best ways to regulate the extremes, especially on the 2 big side of the body signal equation?
Yeah, Carrie, that's a great question. And what we're finding is that the approach that we're taking with the interoception curriculum, which is adaptive mindfulness, is not only helpful for individuals that have too small of body signals, but it's also helpful for individuals that are experiencing body signals that are too big, because it helps to, first of all, organize their inner experience, because that inner experience can be very chaotic for individuals with body signals that are too big. And also it helps you to be able to shift your attention around. So for example, like if you're someone that has a panic disorder and your attention tends to get stuck on a body signal, whether it's a racing heart or it's a breathlessness feeling, and learning how to spread your attention around to different body signals can be really, really helpful. So we're finding that the same process works for both too big and too small.
Thank you. And Erin says, can we gain more influence over implicit interoception through working on explicit interoception?
Yeah, that's a great question. The research is not quite there yet for that, mm-hmm. but I think that what we're seeing clinically is absolutely that your implicit side definitely can improve while you're through the work on explicit interception. Yeah. You know, what I didn't say is interception, the field of interception is so young that it's only like, I mean, someone defined interception over 100 years ago, but research didn't start coming out until 2002, until Dr. Bud Craig, he's a neuroscientist, started studying it in his lab and really brought attention to it. So if you think about that, like that's 2002, that's only 18 years. So it's relatively young, but there is just so much research coming out every single day. So we're learning new things about interception all the time.
Thank you. Stephanie says, do you see the increase in long-term symptoms of COVID connected to IA?
Oh, well, what a good question. Well, I mean, I think that there's a lot of different ways to answer that, but I think just COVID in general being, I mean, I would say that it has a good chance of causing a lot of mental health challenges as well as possible trauma. And we know that mental health and trauma are all connected to interception challenges. So I think if we can put all that together, like I'm working with schools right now and how can we get this work put into place for all kids in schools as in a way to support kids as they're transitioning back to school after the pandemic. I mean, we're still in the pandemic, but can we be doing things now and as soon as the pandemic's over to be like working on interception?
Yeah, that's a big topic. Mm-hmm. Neil says, if someone scores high on anxiety interception, does that mean that they're too aware of their anxious feelings or that they experience anxiety more accurately? Excuse my English.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if I understand the question, it could be both. I don't know if the question is, are they overfeeling their body signals and that's causing anxiety, or are they having more anxiety and that's why they're noticing their body signals more? Is that correct?
Yeah. If someone is very high on anxiety, then does that mean that they're too aware of their anxious feelings?
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely research is inconclusive. There's two arguments here that some people say that for people with anxiety, they can overfeel their internal sensations, which then leads to even more anxiety. And for other people, they're finding in their studies that people with anxiety have body signals that are too small. And so they don't have reliable body clues telling them when they are anxious, and then thus that does not trigger them or does not urge them to use a coping strategy. So I don't know, the verdict is out on that one.
Yeah, I think I second the second option there. Like I have anxiety and I totally like get off, totally disconnected, unembodied. Any insights with transgender dysphoria?
There is some recent emerging literature looking at interceptive awareness in that group, and it's not conclusive. I think just even given the high levels of trauma in that group, that this is something I think it's interception is something that we all need to be aware of in all of our lives. But I think if you have a high chance of being a part of something or situation or an experience that has caused you trauma, then we definitely need to be paying attention to interceptive awareness for sure.
Yeah. And Jim Rush says, can you talk about the overlap with couples and intimacy?
Yeah. And I think, am I seeing him talking about entrainment too? Jim, like I'm kind of obsessed with entrainment right now. I'm not sure if you're talking about how our body rhythms sync together when we're together. And that's obviously a part of intimacy. But there's some really cool research looking at how
yes, he says.
Yes. There's some really cool research looking at, like, for example, I was reading a study that it was like a church choir, and all of their heartbeats when they're singing together, they all sync together. So that's all about entrainment, that usually one rhythm that's stronger will sync other rhythms together, and they all become one rhythm. And so, I mean, I think that's such cool things to think about, and how there's so many ways I could go with this question, but like, I just think about like how, if we're aware of our own interoceptive signals and we can keep our body rhythms going in the way that we want other people to experience us, and for them to be experiencing the situation, can we also like be almost a calming force for them? Like, so if we can stay calm and our rhythms are slow, can we then entrain other people that might be dysregulated to entrain with us and, to have more rhythmic and slower body rhythms?
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's a lot. I'm taking a lot with me. Thank you very much, Kelly. Yeah. It's a lot of information. I'm sure, sorry, the questions we couldn't answer. You can always go on the group on Facebook, mm-hmm. and Kelly will be answering your questions, and you can follow her and follow her work.
Yeah.
And I invite you all to the next session in this channel. Follow the channel and all the other channels. We also have the coffee breaks in the community section of the website. You can click over there and connect with all the amazing community, as well as in the Facebook group. All the links are on the chat. And thanks to our sponsor for making this possible. Sorry, the video didn't have the audio.
We actually can. The audio issue should be fixed. So I'm going to just very quickly screen share one more time.
Let's do it.
All right.
So this is very important. Yes.
Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet, and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things that aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it. Thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
Thank you, Mark. And thanks to our sponsor. To see everything that Dr. Kelly Mahler has to offer, you can check her website, kelly-mahler.com. Link is in the chat, her Facebook group again. And the full content of the conference has a 50% discount right now. You can purchase it clicking on the link in the chat. And by purchasing, you're going to get access to the learning list for the structure, to the notes for quick reviews of the sessions, for audio recordings for listening on the go, and the entire library for lifetime. That is amazing. If you're like me, that I take time integrating things, then it is a really, really good deal. Dr. Kelly, what is your top tip on how to be embodied?
My top tip to be embodied is, of course, to tune into your interoceptive signals and go easy on yourself at first, especially if you're new to an embodiment practice. And we found it very helpful, like I shared, to start by challenging yourself to tune into one body part at a time and slowly over time build that awareness of your entire body.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Kelly. Thank you, everyone, for being here, for supporting this amazing community to make this real, this crazy and beautiful idea real for all of us. And yeah, we'll see you in the next session. Don't forget to check Dr. Kelly's work, Facebook groups for her work, and as well for the conference. All the channels have different groups as well, and the entire conference has one group, so you can tune in over there with more embodied people, or at least getting there. See you soon. Bye bye.